Additional Encore audio archive recordings are available at www.12steptapes.com. We request you not upload this recording to the major free outlets. We are happy to allow free listening on our own site with a subscription service. Contact us on www.12steptapes.com for more information.
Good evening. It's afternoon. I'm still on Texas time, y'all, okay? My name is Maddie Thomas, and I am a very grateful member of the Al-Anon Family Group, and I am an Al-Anon member involved in Al-Teen Service. First and foremost, I want to start off, and I want to thank Karen, Jamie, because they're the chair and co-chair, and they've been very helpful, very warm, answering my questions, answering my phone call, and thank you for that gift basket that came to my room. Thank you. Where's Renee? Renee and Yannick? Renee picked me up from the airport. And she was there on time, I want you to know. And her and Yana took us to this fabulous Chinese restaurant called Chi Cha, whatever. The food was amazing. But I want y'all to know I've been up since 3 o'clock yesterday morning. So after I ate, you know what happens when you eat? You get sleepy. I came to the hotel, and I want you to know they let me in early. And I got some rest. So thank you all. Thank you for being so warm. Thank you for being so welcoming. Now I want to talk about y'all. Let me tell you about Texas. And these raffles that y'all have going. I told somebody, I said, I brought Texas money with me. I didn't bring any California money. See, in Texas, our raffles go like this. You get 6 tickets for $5, and you get 12 tickets for $10. Y'all ain't like that. So I tell her, I said, I didn't bring California money. I just brought Texas money. He said, well, we take Texas money. I said, then I need 6 tickets for $5 and 12 for $10. Okay. Well, as y'all know, I am a Houstonian. I'm a native Texan. I was born in Houston. And I want you to know, I did not grow up in an alcoholic home. My dad was stricken with polio when I was very young, but my mom went on to still have 6 of us. My mom used to always say I was the reason she didn't have a child too. She was 15 years old when she had me. You would think she wouldn't have had any more, but she did. And she always used to say, you're the reason I didn't have a childhood. And I used to tell my siblings, I said, you know, she's going to say that one time too many. I'm going to have to tell her about herself. Well, I become a teenager, and she said it. And I looked at her, I said, you should have kept your legs closed. I'm going to tell you, I never said that again because I almost lost my teeth. But I did think it. As I said, in my home, there was no alcoholism, but my dad was the youngest of 14, and my dad's siblings were alcoholics. My aunts on my dad's side were beautiful, beautiful women, but they were alcoholics, and so were their husbands. And every time when the weekend came, it was party, and they would drink, they'd get drunk, and you know what happens? They fight, and the men would beat my aunts in the face. And my aunts and my uncles on my dad's side of the family, they died of alcoholism. On my mom's side of the family, my mom had 5 brothers, and they were well known within the city of Houston, especially in the community in which we live. And but they provided other community services, okay? And some of y'all may know what that is. I used to always say, I will not be like my mom. I would not be like my mom. My mom raged all the time. But one thing my mom used to tell us, because we grew up at the projects, and my mom used to look at us, and she used to say to us, you got to be better than them. You're going to have to work harder than them, and you're going to have to do more than them. And she used to say that all the time. When I graduated from high school, my mom went back and got her GED. My mom moved us out of the projects. So my youngest siblings, they did not grow up in the projects. I was in college, and when I came out of college, my mom had a house. In that house, I'm out of school, I have a job, I get pregnant, I have a child. And I'm still living in my mom's house. And you know what it's like living with your mom? Living in their home, your parents' home, it's always their house. Every time something happened, I was reminded I lived in her house. So I had to move. And I did, because I worked. And I moved to the southwest side of town, really nice upcoming part of Houston. That's where, you know, the Houston Oilers and all the young football players were living on the southwest side. And that's where I moved, because I had a pretty good job. Now, I'm living on the southwest side, and this young family moves in from Kingsville, Texas. He worked for the railroad. She was a teacher, but she was pregnant. And we became friends. And as it got closer to her due date, we gave her a baby shower. During this baby shower, my house was the drop-off house for my nephews, and I had my nephews and my son. So when the party got started, I left, went to check on the boys, and when I come back for the party, there's this guy sitting in there with some bloodshot eyes, a big dirty cowboy hat on, and some cowboy boots. He took one look at me and he says, "You, come here." I looked at him, I said, "Oh no, mm-mm." See, he had on cowboy boots, he did wear a suit. My men that I dated wore three-piece suits, shiny shoes, and they were professionals, and he didn't meet the mold. But I don't know how he met my son. I found out later how he met my son. And for all you single women out there, if y'all have children, don't let your child pick your man, okay? For some reason, the conversation in my home still going like this. My son would say, "Why don't you date CT?" I look at him and say, "I don't like CT." He said, "Oh, he a good guy. He is 7. And he talked about he's a good guy." Well, finally, I go on a date with CT. 42 years later, I guess I'm still dating CT. And that's CT over there. CT and I get married, and we have a daughter, and he working for the railroad, I work in the medical center. We making a really nice income, and we buy a house, and we have this housewarming party, and all of our friends come and to the housewarming party, but one of his friends came there to that party, and he looked at me, and he says, "Maddie, this is a nice house. You won't have it long." I'm looking at him, I'm like, how dare he say something? We're celebrating. We won't have it long. Little did I know how true those words were. Because one day I come home, we have no lights. Another day I come home, we have no gas. I come home, we have no lights, no gas, and no water. We should have been living like this. But we live so low. I remember putting him out one day. We had gotten into it, and I put him out. You know who gave him a place to live? My mom. I want you to know for 10 years, I did not speak to my mom. Even though we had gotten back together, I didn't speak to her. See, I knew how to hold resentment because, see, that's how my mom treated us. Our punishment from her, when we got old enough for her not to be able to whoop our butts anymore, She punished us with silence. So for me not to talk to her for 10 years, I want you to know that was a good 10 years, okay? Mm-mm. But we'd get back together. But things don't change. Not at all. One day I'm home, and he comes home. And when he walks in the house, he's full, and I'm in his face. You know how we do when they're full of it? I want you to know, no man had ever, ever put his hands on me. Still, my mom's side of the family, men didn't hit women. That they did a lot of other things, but hitting a woman was something they did not do, and no man had ever put their hands on me. But on this particular day, he pushed me. Now, I told y'all I grew up in the projects, and we fought all the time. I had a little education, so I was refined, and I didn't do those things anymore. But this was in the 80s, and cable TV's out. Lifetime movie channel is out. Oh, I want y'all to know I love that channel. How to Kill Him and Get Away With It, okay? That's how I named it, okay? The movie The Burning Bed had come out. I love, love, love that movie. I know some of y'all have seen that movie. See, this was a woman scorned. Her husband was an alcoholic. He was abusive. And she had just had enough. I looked at him. I didn't cry. See, one thing we didn't do is cry. I didn't cry. I got up. I brushed myself off. I lit me a cigarette. I turned that TV on, and I listened. So I was listening for him to snore. You know that snoring they do, and it rattles the whole house. He did that. And when I heard him, I got up. I went to the garage. I got the lighter fluid. I went back in that bedroom, and I covered him, and I told him, wake his, and I had a cigarette lighter clicking it, saying, wake yo, and tell me why you shouldn't go to hell. You know, they say we're suicidal or homicidal, and I ain't gonna kill myself. But him, my son heard me screaming at him, and my son looked at me, and he said, if you do this, we won't have anybody. But let me tell you, let me back up. My sister's a police officer, my nephew's a police officer, my cousin's a police officer, and I used to go to work, and I'd do my to-do list, and at 5 o'clock it said, go home and kill CT. So I called my sister one day, I said, Pumpkin, if I buy some cocaine and mix it up, and CT take it and he die, will I go to jail? She said, yep, and I can't go to jail. But I want you to know this particular night when my son said he wouldn't have anybody, I called my girlfriend. I said, I got to go. Because, see, y'all, I had been trying to kill CT for a long time, okay? I just couldn't go to jail doing it. I called my girlfriend. I said, I got to go. Because if I don't leave, I'm going to kill CT, I'm going to be in jail, and my kids won't have anybody. And that next day, I got up, my girlfriend came, and we went looking for a house. There was a house in Missouri City in the cul-de-sac, and it had a for sale sign on it. I called that number, and I want you to know I was not one to cry. We didn't cry. Mm-mm. But this particular day, I dialed that number. And the man on the other end, I told him everything that was going on in my life, and I boo-hooed. And it was like he understood. And he said, Miss Thomas, if you want that house, I'll make it possible for you to have it. And he made arrangements for me to go to the Galleria, to his office, and when I got there, was another gentleman there. And I want you to know, when I left that office, I had the deeds to a house with no money down. Angels, angels everywhere, and I didn't even recognize it at that time. And I used to say, if only he wasn't there, everything would be okay. If only he wasn't there. and he wasn't there. And I found myself standing in the middle of my living room screaming to the top of my voice, and he wasn't even there. It wasn't about him anymore, but I still didn't know this. I cried out to a God that I didn't believe in, because see, growing up, you Black, Baptist, you going to church every Sunday, Wednesday, Thursday. Don't let the summertime come. You're going to be in church during the summertime. I did not like church. I didn't like the preacher. I didn't like his wife. I didn't like his daughter. And I was very vocal about not liking those people either. And I said, when I turn 18, I'm never going to church again. And I didn't. I didn't go to church again. See, God didn't like us. We were poor. My dad had polio. We had no money. We didn't even have a car. But the preacher had a house, had a car. He had everything. And my grandparents and my mom and them, they was putting money in that collection basket. You know how the Baptist church do. Every 5 minutes, the basket is being passed to the church. Y'all know I'm telling the truth. And that's what I saw. So, but I'm crying out to this God that I didn't even acknowledge. I said, God, if just give me a good man, one who don't drink, who don't do drugs, who don't just, and you know, be careful what you pray for, because God answers prayers. I found that out too. I met this guy. CT and I are not living together. We separated. I met this guy. I said, give me a good man, and God did. He was a good man. Anything I asked for, anything I wanted, he tried to provide. But he would always say things to me like, Matt, I'm always short. And he did everything to make me happy. And I always complained that he says, Matt, I'm always short. Let me tell you, he was so boring, it was unbelievable he was boring. You know, we all know love of some alcoholics. We like the excitement. He was boring. Now CT and I, we separated. And we were separated for 3 years. And during those 3 years, CT was working on himself, but I'm not in Al-Anon. I had been around Al-Anon because in 1986, I think it was when CT first tried to get sober, they suggested we go to some Al-Anon meetings, okay? So, 1986, I go to this Al-Anon meeting because I'm told CT, we were doing with the family after. And so I go to this Al-Anon meeting, and the only thing that's happened is a bunch of women in there crying, talking about how they're trying to commit suicide. And I'm sitting there listening to this, and I'm like, finally I raised my hand. They called on me. Only thing I could say was, kill him, kill him. Al-Anon was not for me, okay? And I did not go back to Al-Anon because that's what I thought Al-Anon was. Where a bunch of women get together and talk about trying to kill themselves because their loved ones wasn't, you know, getting sober. No, kill him. But now CT and I back, you know, he decided his sponsor, he's sober now. He's been sober 3 years. And he comes and he says, it's my birthday. And he buys me this beautiful emerald and diamond ring, and he comes over to my house. He calls, asks if he could come over. I say, yeah. He comes, and he gives me this beautiful ring. And when before he left, he invited me on a date, y'all. So I tell him I had to think about it. See, we've been through the song and dance so many times. I got to think about it. So when he left, I went to talk to my girlfriend's mom. I called her Mama D. See, Mama D had been married for 50-plus years, and I need to talk to a married woman, somebody who had been through some things. See, a single woman can't tell me how to be married. So I need to talk to a married woman. So I go over, and I talk to her, and I said, Mama D, CT wants us to get back together. He wants to go on a date. And we weren't divorced, and she told me. She says, Maddie, you're still married. He's your husband. If you want to date him, nobody's business. And I says, you know, you're right. So I call him up. He answers the phone, y'all. You know us Al-Anons, we listen. And I said, hey, he stutters. First mistake, y'all. He stuttered. Hey. I said, you still want to go on that date? Yeah. And he talking just like that. I hang that phone up. I look at Mama D. I say, he got a woman over there. She said, no, man. I said, oh, yes, she does. I go home. I get cute y'all. I drive to his apartment. I knock on the door. He opens the door. Lights low. Music soft. And she is sitting on the sofa. I just loved it. I put a big smile on. I walked in. I looked at her. I said, hi, my name is Matt. And I shook her hand. And I sat right beside her dinner CT. And we just chit. He said, would you like something to drink? I said, I'll take a glass of water. I got that glass of water, took a couple of sips, gave it back to him. I looked at him. I said, we need to walk her to her car because we have a date. And we walked her to her car, and we went on our date, did we, baby? Yeah. So, his sponsor told him he needed to date me. Come to find out, he liked going to conferences like this. And it was in January 1992, he invited me to go to a conference. And I said yes, and I went. Well, it was an AA conference with Al-Anon participation. And at that conference, I went to some Al-Anon meetings. At those meetings, not one time did anyone say anything about their alcoholic loved one. I was listening. They didn't talk about trying to commit suicide. They was talking about things they were doing for themselves. They were talking about those steps. They was talking about, and they had these smiles on their face. When I got home, I said, I need to find that. I need to find an Al-Anon meeting like that. Because if CT and I was to get back together, I needed to make some changes. Because, see, every time we had a conversation, I went back to, if you hadn't have did this, we wouldn't be in this situation. If you. It was always, if he hadn't have done, we wouldn't be here. I needed to do some work because I was raised just like my mom. So off I go looking for an Al-Anon meeting. Now, CT got a big personality, and he's known all over Houston. So off I go looking for an Al-Anon meeting. Every Al-Anon meeting that I went to had AA meeting. And when I go, oh, you're CT's wife, and they tell me how wonderful he was. I can't go there. Mm-mm. Nope. I finally find the meeting. They knew him. But not one person said how wonderful he was. That's where I needed to be. And they were working the steps. They was working those traditions. They were talking about things they were doing for themselves. It was just like I heard at the conference. So this is where I started going. They had meetings on Wednesdays and Sundays. Wednesdays and Sundays, I was there. Every Wednesday, every Sunday. Now I had been going to this meeting for like 6 months or so. And they had a call for a business meeting. They need a secretary. They hadn't had a secretary in a long time. And everybody got a her in their group. I don't know about y'all, but I know most of the groups I go to, they got a her. And she wasn't there that night when they had this business meeting. And I raised my hand to be the secretary. Everybody looked at each other, and when I left that night, I was the secretary for the group. 8 o'clock a.m. the next morning, she calls me. And the conversation went like this. Hi, Maddie. This is Mary Jane. I heard you were the secretary, and I just want to tell you why you can't be the secretary. You can't be the secretary. You know, I stopped listening because, see, I had been going to this meeting and I saw when new people came in, how they got welcomed and hugged and all of this good stuff. I never got that at this meeting. I never got a welcome. I never got a, we're glad you're here, keep coming back, like I heard them do all the other people who was coming in that room. And when I hung that phone up, I looked at him. Light bulb moment. I said, they don't want me there. I said, but guess what? See, I have that personality. Don't tell me I'm not wanted somewhere, okay? Every time they have a meeting, they gonna see this black face. And every time they had a meeting, they saw this black face. See, I was told Al-Anon was for everybody. I was in pain. I needed what they had. I wasn't there to make friends. I didn't need their friendship. I needed to understand how to work those 12 steps that they talked about every Wednesday and every Sunday. That's what I needed. I needed to understand that. I needed to understand those traditions that they talked about. I needed to understand. And when I'm thirsty for something, I'm going after it. And I needed this program because, as I said, I need to learn how to deal with this rage, this anger, all of that that I was dealing with. You know, I said that a lot of stuff was caused by my marriage. But as I got into these steps and I started looking at me and my behavior and how I grew up, I brought a lot of this into my relationships. He didn't cause it. And I want you to know, my husband is not my qualifier. See, I don't believe in such thing as qualifier. I qualified to be in this program many years before I even knew Al-Anon existed. So we don't use the word qualifier in our rooms because we're our own qualifier. No, that's my husband. I'm here because I need help. I want to read before I get into these steps and when I found the sponsor about, and in my home group, we don't use the daily readers because we're reading somebody else's experience on how they dealt with a situation. You can't see it, but this is how Al-Anon worked for family and friends of alcoholics. See, this is my big book. It's given me the tools that I need to apply to my life and the situations and when I work those steps and those traditions. So, in my book, it's chapter 5, and it starts on page 21. It's called Becoming Aware. And I'm going to read it in the first person because, see, the only way things can resonate with me, I have to read it in the first person so I can internalize it. It says, I came to Al-Anon seeking change, and this is why I came. I wanted to end my pain, and I turned to Al-Anon in the hope of finding out what to do. But I wasn't yet ready to take action, no matter how eager I am or how impatient I feel. Change is a process. And in Al-Anon, I recognize that becoming aware is the first stage of this process. This involves taking an honest look at myself and my circumstances. Although it sounds simple, after years of hiding the unpleasant aspect of reality from myself as well as others, I found an honest appraisal to be a struggle. And I did, because when I started working those steps, I found a sponsor. And it was hard for me to find a sponsor because, see, I didn't want to be judged. I had done a lot of things, and I found out that I had to, in order for me to heal, I had to be honest with me. So when I found my sponsor and I started talking to her and telling her some things, she says, okay, Maddie, we're going to do these steps like this. We're going to break them down for you. Step 1, 2, and 3, giving up. I knew I was powerless over alcohol. That I did know. But I realized, you know, growing up, you always, if you just do as I tell you to do, everything will be okay. Just do as I tell you to do. And they didn't do what I told them to do. That's what I grew up with. That's what I heard. That's what I took to my family. I had no control of them. They were their own individual. And the only thing it was doing is causing the me pain. Because I was the one getting frustrated because they weren't doing what I wanted them to do. In this program, they say we no longer become victims. We are willing participants if we continue to do the same thing over and over again. came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Well, you know, I told you I had put God out of my life years ago. Insane? No. But when I thought back on the things that I did, my behavior, that's insanity. Would I do that today? No, I'm going to tell you now, I'm not going to burn him up, okay? Now, there's some days I do still want to hit him upside the head with a pan, but I haven't done that either because he said he can't wait to call the police on me, so that won't happen. And made a decision to turn my will and my care over to the care of God. I want you to know, as I understood him, and my sponsor kept me on those two steps, two and three, a very long time. She didn't just braze over them. She kept me there. She said, Maddie, you're going to have to learn to have some faith. Follow along in the healing. Maddie, there is hope in this program. Hold on, pain ends. Hearing other people experience. I don't know, we have a lot of acronyms. You know, Stan talked about a lot of slogans. We have slogans, but we got a lot of acronyms also. As I thought back, and when I got to that fourth step, and I continued to look at and reflect over all the things that I had been through, one of the things that I recognized was God never left me. He never moved. I did. He carried me. All the time, you know, you say higher power, but you're going to hear me talk about the God that I serve today because I recognize that he carried me when I thought I was doing it by myself. Angels, angels everywhere. Then we get to step four. In Path to Recovery, and that's what we did my step from Path to Recovery. On page 40 in Path to Recovery, about that fourth step, it talks about the four M's, the mothering, the martyrdom, the manipulation, the management. Oh, I could do a martyrdom very well. I could manage your life very well. Do this, do that, everything's going to turn out fine. Manipulate, why you didn't do it that way? You know, if only manipulate. I remember growing up, my sister used to tell me, and my younger sister, my friends don't like you. And I used to tell her, I don't care if your friends don't like me. I want you to know when I finished that fourth step, I didn't like me. I'm being honest with me. I didn't like my behavior. I didn't like how I made you feel. We used to say, oh, I hurt your feelings, suck it up, buttercup. And my family, we didn't apologize for anything. We just moved on to the next whatever's going on. That was no apology. So there was no apology in my home either. Admit to God, to another person, I talked to my sponsor about everything. And then when she says, man, okay, getting ready to have God remove these defects of character. She said, it ain't going to happen yet. She said, but you got to prepare yourself. I said, well, some of my defects I like. I'm going to hold on to some of those. I'm going to tell you now, I'm on this side of the dirt. And my home groups know I say this all the time. I'm on this side of the dirt. And as long as I'm on this side of the dirt, I'm not going to get everything perfect. That's all there is to it. I'm not going to work those 12 steps perfect every day. I'm not going to do those traditions perfect every day because I'm human. But the good news is I have those steps to look at to see what my part is. And do I need to make some changes for me? Not for him, but for me. Now step. And those four steps, 4, 5, and 6, is owning up. I had to own up to my behavior when I did those 4, 5, and 6. Now we're at step 7, 8, 9, making up. I got to make some amends. I'm like, why am I apologizing to him? I know some of y'all thought about that too. Why you got to apologize to the alcoholic in your life? They the screw up. But when I thought about some of my behavior, it took me a long time. And I said, first thing I said was, I don't recall him apologizing to me. And I had to think and think and think. And you know what? I couldn't find where he apologized to me. So I called him out on it. And he said, his apology went like this. Man, I'm sorry. Y'all hear me say I'm sorry, didn't you? That's another story in that story, okay? But I don't have time for it. But I want to talk about my children. I took my daughter to Alateen. Best thing I could ever do. My son wouldn't go to Alateen. My son held me hostage for many, many years. And that's in the program. I paid rent. I bought cars. This is in the program. And I'm not talking 5 or 6 years in the program. I'm talking 10 plus years in the program. I'm doing all this for my son. And finally, I talked to my sponsor about it, and my sponsor said, you know, Maddie, you're going to have to learn to parent your son as an adult. I want you to know that was very hard to do. Because, see, I felt guilty. My son didn't accept my apology either when I first apologized to him. He didn't. Because it was too easy to make me feel guilty for all the things that I did. See, I'm not proud of the fact that I took a lot of my anger and a lot of my frustration out of my children. I'm not proud of that. And I had to make amends for that. My daughter, she was okay with that. But my son, he used it to his convenience until I said, no, the bank is closed. And when I said the bank was closed, I'd never forget one time he says, well, can you open it? No. And I said, no, not hell no. I'll talk about my son for a minute. My son watched my husband, his dad, get sober. He watched him get sober. He celebrated his sobriety. We're on our way to Canada, 2015, we're on our way to Canada. And we was changing the planes in Chicago, and I get a phone call. Well, that phone call was my sister, the one that's a police officer. There had been a major accident on Highway 6 in Houston, and a pickup truck had hit an 18-wheeler. And the pickup truck's busted into flames. The person in that truck was life-flighted to the medical center. That person was my son. I talked to the doctor. He told me my son would be still there when I got back. And when I got back, my son was there, but he told me it would be 18 months before my son ever walked again. And I want you to know my son walked within 6 months. And you would think my son would never, ever want another drink. See, my son was a type 1 diabetic, and he went into a diabetic coma behind the wheel. His blood sugar had went to over 400, and he passed out behind the wheel. But the day he got out of the hospital, his friends were there to go to the bar so they could celebrate. I told you my sponsor told me to sponsor my son as an adult, and I did. Was it easy? No. It was not easy sponsoring my adult child as an adult. But I learned to do it. Was it painful to watch my son go through his journey? Yes, it was. But it was the fellowship of AA and Al-Anon that carried me and my family. As my son made the transition, I let him have his journey, and I was okay with that to an extent. I wasn't angry with God. See, my son, as I told him, he had to find his own God. If I was his God, he'd still be here. But I had to learn to trust God, and I did, because see, I had found the God of my understanding, the God who was loving and kind and who carried me at my lowest moments in life. And I trust him. Now, 10, 11, 12, it says, keeping up. I have to keep up on a daily basis everything that I've learned with those 12 steps. You heard Stan talk about a routine that he does on a regular basis. What I've been doing for the past 20 plus years, every night before I go to bed, I review my day. And I find one good thing that happened that day, and I write about it. Even at the lowest point of my life, and that was the day my son died, I felt something good that happened that day. And I wrote about it. See, my God is awesome. My God is good. So at the end of the year, when December 31st come and everybody's out there celebrating, I look back, I say, I've had a wonderful year. And I have. That house that I told you about, this is when I knew that God actually carried me. CT and I back together, he's living in my house. I love saying that, my house. He says, Matt, it's time for us, me to buy you a house. I owe you a house. And I says, good. I want a house nobody's ever lived in, yada, yada, yada. I want to be the only one ever lived in this house. He says, fine. So we did. Bought me this beautiful, beautiful house. But I held on to my house, that house that I had. And I held on to that house for 10 years. And I leased it out. I had some good tenants, I had some bad tenants, but then I let my nephew lease the house. And after 10 years, as it was time for me to sell that house. See, I held on to that house because CT and I, we still balancing whether or not we're going to make it. Because even though we're both in the program, we two imperfect people living in the same house. We didn't agree all the time. And just because he's sober, he's still an alcoholic, and he still had alcoholic behavior. And I had to decide if that's something I wanted to deal with. And I talked to my sponsor, and that's the power of having a sponsor. And if you don't have a sponsor, somebody you trust with everything, I suggest you get one. So I asked my nephew if he wanted to buy this house. He said yes. And I sold him the house for the balance that I owed on. I'm paying it forward. But I want to thank the man who was in my life at the lowest point of my life. I can't find him. His name is on the deed. I can't find him. We have a friend, and he's a real estate attorney, and I tell him, I says, I need to find this man. So I give him the deeds, and he says, okay. He says, man, I'll help you with that. The first letter that I get comes like 6 months later. He says, dear Maddie, I've looked for this man. I haven't found him yet, but I'm still searching. That second letter that I get, it says, dear Maddie, it's like this man don't exist. I can't find neither one of them anywhere. Angels, angels everywhere. God put people in my life. That lady who did not want me at her group. So fast forward, things are happening. I'm getting more involved in service. I'm chairing meetings. I'm chair of conference. I'm all of this stuff. I'm moving up the line. And CT's still going to meetings. Every time he see the lady, he tell Matt I said hi. I tell him, I said, I don't like her. 3 more minutes. So I decided, you know, if you don't like something that's going on, what you do? You start your own group, okay? Instead of standing there getting the resentment, you start your own group. And I did. I started a group called The Courage to Change. In June of this year, we will celebrate 15 years. But I want you to know that lady I didn't like, when she found out that I was starting the group, she was well known all over the city of Houston, okay? She showed up to my very first meeting, her and 25 of her closest friends. They showed up, and she was in her 80s at that time. And they showed up every week for a year until Courage to Change stood on its own. However, I didn't feel comfortable with her coming and being like we just big friends and everything, and she's sending people to our meeting. So I told her when to come. She's calling me, and I'm like, I need to talk to Mary Jane. So I said, Mary Jane, I need to talk to you a minute. And she said, okay. I got a chance to tell Mary Jane how she made me feel when I came to these rooms. Remember, she's in her 80s. She made amends. We hugged. A friend of mine, she said, Maddie, you still, because she started another group, and she knew I've been involved in Al-Anon. She says, you still going to Al-Anon? I says, yes. She said, what about that old Mary Jane? I says, you left before the miracle happened. And what about old Al? Again, you left before the miracle happened. Because those two people that she named, they were the main ones who came consistently. They were the ones who supported me 100%. And we became friends. We say, stay consistent. Find your seat for the newcomers. Come into these rooms. Find your seat. Find your home group. Find your sponsor. Find someone you trust. We say, come all the way in. Sit out. Before I tell you that, let me tell you about those steps, what they're for. Those 12 steps to keep you, because not me, from committing suicide. Those 12 traditions, I need those a lot, keeps me and a lot of you too from committing homicide. And those 12 concepts keeps the fellowship of Al-Anon from committing genocide. Get in service. So come all the way in, sit all the way down, and stay. Thank you for allowing me to be of service today.